Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Back hour number three on FST. Right after us in the next hour is going to be In This League with Bogman and the Welsh, and then Weekend Fantasy, that's 12 to 3, Weekend Fantasy Update from 3 to 6. You had me thinking about Scott Fishbowl during the break there, Kevin, and I'm going to reach out to Scott. We'll see if we can get him on next week. He'll talk a little bit about the league. Probably too late for people to get in there for this year. We are about a month away. The draft is July 9th. It goes slow draft. I bet you it's a Monday. I remember that's what he did last year. 22 players. The draft timer is 8 hours. So you get 8 hours to make a pick, and like it can take weeks. I was in, of the 60 divisions last year, I was in the slowest or the second slowest in all 60 divisions. There were divisions that fired through their draft in a week. 22 rounds just took a week. Easier to do that way. Industry people, it gets tough to dedicate like a couple of hours of time. It gets hard to do those blocks. So while the slow draft doesn't have the juice that some of the other ones do, I need to do those. Like I can't, you understand, like if you're doing 7 or 8 leagues and you're doing mock drafts and all this kind of stuff, dedicating blocks of time throughout the months of July and August get difficult, especially when you're doing writing and prepping and all this other kind of stuff. So that's why we tend to do slow drafts. Anyway, starts July 9th, so 5 weeks away. It'll be fun. You're in there, so that's good. And we'll talk about it as we go. And you know, it's just one league, but it's good to talk. It gets us to talking about different players and that kind of stuff. So I know you had some other football questions. We're going to do baseball this hour, I promise. And there's a lot to talk about, mainly Clayton Kershaw's injury, Mookie Betts on the DL, and all that kind of stuff. So we'll get to it in the next segment and the final segment. So what do you got, Kev?
So there were a couple of wide receiver groupings that really interest me. There was one-for-one comparison, though, that I was really struck by. Will Fuller or Sammy Watkins? And obviously these things can change as we get more information. Like, it just turned June, so obviously as we get into camp, we'll learn more about certain things. But it was just one, making that decision as of today, it jumped out to me.
It's funny, when I was just doing this mock draft before, I ended up with Brandon Cooks and Sammy Watkins, which was ironic given how they're tied together. I waited because I took Kelsey. I am not the guy that's going to take a tight end early, but in the way this one fell, I felt like Kelsey was a better option in this PPR draft. So I didn't take – I went running back, Kelsey, then receiver. So my first receiver was Cooks. And then I went with Watkins for kind of an upside play a couple of picks later. But I think I have a million questions about Sammy Watkins, and he's not likely to be a guy that I own. But versus Will Fuller, who I love as a talent, but I don't understand quite yet how he's fitting in the NFL. He's been injured. His quarterback play has been terrible slash hurt. I just don't know exactly how he fits in yet. Clearly, DeAndre Hopkins is the lead dog on that team, and he's the number two overall ranked wide receiver. Conversely, you have Tyreek Hill, who's the number 12 ranked guy, with Sammy Watkins complimenting him. I would suggest that there's question marks around both QBs, right?
Yeah.
Watson has at least done something. Pat Mahomes is the Big 12 guy stepping in here, where Andy Reid, historically, as you know, as an Eagles fan, does like to throw the ball. He's gotten some weird reputation with the Chiefs because they've had a good rushing attack that, he favors the run. Back in his days in Philly, he threw the ball a lot at a time when not every coach in the NFL threw more than they passed. He was. And I think he will feel entirely comfortable running an offense with that is opening it up, which obviously this will. Pat Mahomes is known as a downfield passer, and he's going to have Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins on the team, along with Kareem Hunt. I think they are going to spread it out and move the ball downfield, which is obviously something they didn't do consistently during Alex Smith's tenure at QB. He did a much better job of it last year. I still think that's not at all his fault that they weren't a downfield offense, but people would argue against me that Alex Smith just didn't look downfield the way he needed to. So in any event, I think I'm going to shade Sammy Watkins on this debate for now, only because I've seen more production out of him historically. I have plenty of question marks around Sammy Watkins, and he wouldn't be my favorite player to draft. But I start to get worried about the Will Fuller, what exactly his fit will be. I just don't know what it is. We haven't seen it consistently from him, right?
Well, it's weird. I agree to an extent. We saw four games with him and Watson together. Game number one, two touchdowns. Game number two, two touchdowns. Game number three, touchdown. Game number four, two touchdowns. Those were the four games. That was consistent. Now, it is a production at the levels of Randy Moss at his peak that I don't necessarily anticipate Will Fuller to score 25 touchdowns in a season. That feels quite lofty. It does seem, though, as long as Watson is out there, he's going to score double-digit. I mean, he had 7 touchdowns last year in 4 games. If he plays 16, if Watson plays 16, I think the over-under on double-digit touchdowns, I think you'd have to take the over, no?
Probably, but it's also that when you're looking at Will Fuller's production, do you understand, like, from his fantasy production, how touchdown-dependent that ended up being at the end of the year? Yes, he did catch the 7 touchdowns in 4 weeks playing with Deshaun Watson, but he also caught 9, 11, 13 passes in those 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Not great. On the year, he caught 28 passes for 423 yards and 7 touchdowns, the games that you just rattled off. That isn't good production at all. It's kind of an anomaly. You were hoping, nobody would have thought to even start Will Fuller when he stepped on the field. And then 4 for 35 with a couple of touchdowns. You're like, all right, I'll give it a shot. The next week, 2 for 57, 2 more touchdowns. You're like, all right, let's ride the wave. It's more of a DFS play than anything. Boom, 2 for 62, a touchdown. Let's try it one more time. Bam, 5 for 125, 2 scores. I'm starting Will Fuller every week. You can't convince me otherwise. And then what happens? 2 for 32, 2 for 15, 3 for 26, 5 for 44, 1 for 10, 2 for 17. See you later. You probably missed the playoffs. So it's a very weird guy to evaluate. And I think that's probably why he's way down the wide receiver rankings. I mean, he's 40th. He's right behind Jordy Nelson and Robbie Anderson, right in front of Randall Cobb and Sterling Shepard. I think you're taking Will Fuller for an upside play, but I love Sterling Shepard. I just like him a lot as a player. It has nothing to do with the fact that we interviewed him on our show during draft night. I just like him as a player, and I think he's a guy that's going to see the ball more. But Will Fuller is the guy that could wildly outperform expectations, you know? Like, he just could. That's the kind of guy he's going to be. You're going to have to take a risk at him, probably draft him a little higher than you want, and hope it works out, and hope he's doing that 7 touchdown in 4 weeks thing again. So there
I like
go.
That play.
It's probably Sammy over Will Fuller, which is to go back to your original question. What else you got?
So Sammy's replacement, Cooks, is very, very high on draft boards. And one of the names I saw him next to was Ty Hilton. And I ended up personally choosing Ty Hilton a lot. Part of the reason is when I think about Cooks, right, I mean, he kind of fits right into the Watkins role. I think he's better than Watkins. Well, Watkins was in the passing game option number four behind Woods, Kupp, and Gurley. So I feel like I'm going to just be a little hesitant to jump all the way in on Cooks. How would you sit between the two? Perhaps more specifically, though, with Cooks and LA.
Cooks versus Hilton?
Yeah.
So right now, according to Fantasy Pros, T.Y., by the way, on this show, let's just call him T.Y. because I know other people call him Ty. I like to call him T.Y. I've been a T.Y. Hilton fan for some time, so I feel like I'm going to call him T.Y. So cool. It's T.Y. Hilton at 14, Brandon Cooks at 24. The players in between them, Stephon Diggs, Amari Cooper, Demaryius Thomas, Allen Robinson, Josh Gordon, jeez, Golden Tate, Alshon Jeffrey. I mean, it's just crazy, right? The guy just comes back, and everybody's like, boom, wide receiver two. Golden Tate, Alshon Jeffrey, Jarvis Landry, Juju Smith-Schuster, then Brandon Cooks. Where are the other Rams wide receivers? Cooper Kupp at 35. Where's Robert Woods? Let me just look that up. It's important for me to. Where's Woods? Woods. Oh, man. Where is he? 27. So it's Brandon Cooks right behind him, Robert Woods, and then Kupp after that. So, it's a good one. T.Y. Hilton can be super frustrating. He was last year, obviously, because Luck was hurt. And I had T.Y. Hilton in the Scott Fishbowl League that we're talking about earlier. And with Luck out, Hilton was rough to own. But T.Y. Hilton is just always going to be a home run hitter, and you're going to have really great weeks, and you're going to have super frustrating weeks. Let's look at his game logs last year and see if it was indicative. I'm even going to go back to 2015 when Andrew Luck was playing, just so, to give you an idea of what his weeks could look like. And he finished the year 69 for 1,124 and 5 touchdowns. And he had a 4 for 150 and 2 touchdowns. He had a 6 for 95 and 2 touchdowns. He had a 4 for 132. And then a 4 for 94, but there's a bunch of other weeks, like 4 for 45, 1 for 15, 2 for 21, 3 for 36, 3 for 29. That's going back to his game logs when Luck was playing. And I just think you have to be mindful of him having it, just being a peaks and valleys kind of guy. That's just how his season goes. Doesn't mean he's a bad player. I'm just saying from a fantasy standpoint, there are certain teams that can lock down a small receiver like that. And Brandon Cooks, to his credit, he must be the most disrespected wide receiver in the whole league. He's now going to be on his third team in 3 years, and all he did last year was go 78 for 1173 and 8 touchdowns. The year before that, 84 for 1138 and 9 touchdowns. This guy's been traded twice after putting up seasons like that. It's only his fifth year in the league. And it's another new team, and I'm the first one to tell you, like, when a guy moves teams, you got to be careful of that. But it hasn't slowed him down. It hasn't. I like him. I'd be more likely to draft Cooks than Hilton this year.
Yeah, I mean,
I know it was a long rant, but
no, it's fine. I pulled up last year's target numbers for the Rams. Kupp led them at 95. Gurley was second with 87. Woods came in third with 85. And then with 15 less than the number three on the team, Watkins was at 70. He ended up, though, with 8 touchdowns and 7 yards under 600. So he was at 593. Again, I do think that Cooks is better than Sammy Watkins. I just wonder if he gets put into this role. Do we see that same production? I also feel like Sammy Watkins got a lot of those touchdowns in the red zone, if I'm not mistaken. If
memory serves, Brandon Cooks is a more productive player than Sammy Watkins in the last couple of years. He just is.
No, 100%, right? But if he is it? Do you feel like maybe is it less one for one that Cooks is going to come in and just be in the Sammy Watkins role? Does that role just get expanded?
I don't see that. I'd say better season than Sammy Watkins for sure.
I definitely think it's better. My question is, last year, again, Sammy Watkins was the fourth best wide receiver. Like, if Todd Gurley only played wide receiver, He had more catches, more yards, and two less touchdowns than Sammy Watkins as a wide receiver. He was their fourth best wide receiver last year on this team. So I'm not saying that Cooks is going to be the fourth best wide receiver, but is he going to be a wide receiver two caliber guy? I have hesitation.
It's personally. A good question. Based on what other experts are thinking right now, and I'm probably in this line of thinking, Cup's the possession guy. Gurley can come in and do what Gurley does, but they're going to use Cooks as the one. Woods is the two. Cup as the slot. That's just how it's going to work out. That's a pretty damn good receiving core, too. I always thought Robert Woods was horribly underutilized in Buffalo, and now he had a really nice season last year. Like, I think that's more who Robert Woods is. He was nasty at USC, and now he's in a better spot, better QB, better offense, all that kind of stuff. So that's how it's going to line up. Is it all going to work out, or are they going to have some bumps in the road where they're like, you know what, Woods is the one, and you're in the Watkins role, and maybe. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like, if they came in and gave him a little bit more than what Sammy gave them last year, they'd be a better team already without having to up and overturn the apple cart. But, yeah, I think Woods comes in here and is productive. It's going against some of the things that I say regarding wide receivers switching teams. I tend to avoid that, but I could see myself being on the Cooks bandwagon again just because I think he's a sort of an overlooked player. I think he's been incredibly productive. To do that on two different teams 2 years in a row, it would have to be high expectations for him to do it a third time, but I respect him as a player. I like him a lot.
Yeah, I think it's more so I just want to see. I will say there was video from some of their OTAs, I believe, of basically Sean McVay drooling over Cooks' speed, and I think that is a good omen.
Yeah, I mean, he just got there. They got months to figure this out. Let's come back. We're going to talk baseball. Kershaw, Mookie Betts, Mitch Haniger with a walk-off, and more. Mike Blute and Kevin Walsh coming back for baseball.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
All right, we're back on FST, and I was listening to the commercial during the break with Craig Carton talking about LeBron's capri pant suit, shorts. They weren't even capris. Capris go like past the knee, right? Just showing like down a maybe mid-calf. Those weren't that. Those are short pants, the kind of thing that I wore in the 70s when I was like 3 years old to a formal event. There's a picture of it in my parents' house of like me wearing like a nice little buttoned coat and a matching pair of shorts. I was literally three, so that's what LeBron wore. I'm no fashion plate. I'm not going to pretend to be, but I'm not wearing that. I'm also super pale, so it's not a good look. But yeah, that's a tough look. I don't care. I've seen a bunch of these guys: Russell Westbrook, LeBron with that move. Cam Newton with his long pink blazer that one time. I think that they're fashion trendsetters, but as your point at which it's the emperor's new clothes, you got to just tell the guy, dude, this is not the look. Like, somebody got to pull you aside and be like, bro, this doesn't work, right?
Strong disagree.
Of course, like LeBron's suit.
No. Wasn't even going to mention that. The Russell Westbrook apparel, the Cam Newton stuff, the ensembles that which James Harden and PJ Tucker pulled up to each game and at the press conferences in, I love it. I absolutely love it.
I don't mind people taking choices. Like, and look, if you're going to be the fashionista guy, you're going to have to take some chances. There's going to be some misses along the way, right? And I don't mind guys taking chances. You don't have to be like the president. Like I remember Barack Obama, like Barack, not this president. I remember Barack Obama talking about it. He's like, I avoid decision fatigue. So I just go with gray and blue suits. Like that's just what I do. I'm just going to wear that every day. So I make sure they fit nice and that's it. And I can appreciate that as well. Function over fashion. But you know, I don't mind guys taking chances. I'm just saying I don't like the short pants suit. It's not my favorite. You can't do other stuff. The pink blazer from Cam was horrible.
Disagree. Love the pink blazer.
And he was wearing capris that day too.
Yeah, those are capris. His are like shin.
He had capris.
Shin level. Those are capris.
So you like the pink blazer from Cam Newton?
Yeah, I do.
That was a terrible look.
I think colored suits are not made common enough. I think that they are fantastic. This isn't as bright, but I've been dying to get a maroon suit. Haven't gotten
Cam yet. Redheaded, so I'm red. Whatever hair I have left is red, so I can't do the maroon suit. It's not a signature color for me. I got to go navies and dark greens and that
kind
of stuff.
What about like a baby blue, baby powder blue suit? I think you'd rock that.
I'd have to see it on me. I would. I don't have anything like that, but you know, I have shirts of that color, so whatever. So there you go. That's the fashion segment for the year. Let's talk about
the year.
I think so. I don't think we should be the two guys guiding people's fashion choices for the foreseeable future. So do some game recaps from last night. Probably should have talked baseball. There's just so much baseball going on last night. I watched a whole bunch of it. But Chris Sale went up against Garrett Cole last night. Cole gets the win. And I'll get to that game in a minute because that was like the pitching matchup of the night. But you know what it ended up being? Mike Foltynewicz, baby. Folty goes up against Steven Strasburg, and he gets the win. A complete game shutout for Mike Foltynewicz, who is on fire right now. All of you that drafted him are reaping the benefits right now. He throws a two-hit shutout, 11 Ks, one walk, drops his ERA to 2.22. Strasburg goes 6 2/3, gives up 3 earned runs, 10 strikeouts, but he takes the L. 4-0 win for the Braves, who move to 34-23 on the season. And extend their lead on the Nationals. So, big outing from Mike Foltynewicz.
Is it me, or are we getting more complete games this year? There has to be a stat out there, I feel like, than in years past.
Well, we don't get many of them. We don't get many of them in general. But, yeah, we've seen a few guys go the distance. It's a good question, something we could look up. But there are probably a few more this year, it feels like it, from an anecdotal standpoint. But I'll bet you it's from a number standpoint, probably a couple. Or a few. Big outing for Mike Foltynewicz. Freddie Freeman extends his on-base streak. He goes 2-for-4 last night, 338. Freddie Freeman is locked in right now. Obviously a guy that coming off an injury plagued 2017, we now find him in 2018, and he's the Freddie Freeman that people expected and wanted. You know, he's a .293 career hitter. But he comes into, and obviously injury plagued last year, but here we go. His last 30 games, .360. Last 15 games, .373. In his last 7 games, .423. Heating up. 6 homers in those last 30 games. He's got 4 RBIs this week. He's on base percentage is .516 in the last week, .439 in the last 15 games. So Freddie Freeman living up to expectations right now, big time.
I mean, that it's huge for the Braves. I cannot believe just how well that they are doing. 11 games over 500, and I think too for the Foltynewicz performance. I mean, 2 hits. I know the Nationals are still kind of getting back to full strength. They still don't have Murphy, but you 2 hit any major league team, complete game. It's an 11 Ks. That's one of the best performances that we've seen for the whole year.
No doubt. So going back to the other game that I prefaced was Sox Stros. And I turned that game on last night and it was 4-3, tight game. Joe Kelly is in trying to keep it tight. And Carlos Correa hits a bomb off of him, and followed up by Evan Gattis, who hits a two-run bomb off of him, both off of Joe Kelly, who obviously got yanked immediately after that. Stros win 7-3. They've been through a rough stretch of games here against the Yankees, against the Sox, a very tough schedule, and it eases up significantly starting next week. So they'll get through this weekend against the Sox, and the Stros, who have survived it, they're 15 games over 500, may even get on a little bit of a run there as their schedule eases up on them. But Correa, well, first the pitching. We'll do Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole threw seven innings last night, and he was throwing 100 miles an hour in that seventh inning. They were looking it up during the broadcast to see if it was the hardest pitch he'd ever thrown in his career, because he basically he got up to 101 almost on the gun. So not only did he throw seven strong innings again, gave up three runs, seven strikeouts, but he was strong all the way through. Sale takes the loss, six innings, four runs, six strikeouts. So pitched an okay game, but again, Gerrit Cole, he's going to be one of the guys competing for that Cy Young, along with his teammates in Verlander and Charlie Morton.
It is remarkable just how good Gerrit Cole has been. I do think, we might have seen a postseason preview just kind of within this matchup, right? And I think to see, can you even call Gerrit Cole their ace? I don't even know. Is that Verlander still there?
I don't think you can now. And they still have Dallas Keuchel, who won a Cy Young, and Justin Furlander, who was a former MVP in a Cy Young. But I understand what you're saying.
If
they set up the playoffs right now, it would be Verlander.
I don't think that they will. But if they were to play in a wild card game, Verlander would get the ball, right?
Yes.
Okay, so then Cole is not the race, but he is still one of the five best pitchers on the year to go up against Chris Sale. It kind of has a playoff-esque feel to it. And I think when you get those kind of matchups, I always find it telling when a team can pull those out. Like, that's why I felt like some of those games that the Yankees had against the Red Sox and against the Astros to get those type of wins, the excitement within the comeback, they felt playoff-esque. And I think they are very, very good signs. And I mean, these are two of baseball's best teams. Record shows it. Talent shows it. It's all on display. So to go out there and have, you know, the Red Sox best guy against one of the Astros best guys, and for the Astros to get that win, I think that it is certainly something very encouraging. And I was not aware just how the schedule lightens up for them on the horizon. And that's an incredible sign for them to be where they're at, knowing that things are about to ease up a bit.
Yeah, Yanks moved into first place last night with their win over the Orioles. Aaron Judge hit another home run last night. And the Sox lost last night. It's by percentage points due to some delays, to postponements, obviously, on the part of the Yankees. They still have four games in hand. This is an unusual gap at this point of the year, but they've played four games less than the Red Sox. But by percentage points right now, they're in front. So Red Sox this weekend for the Stros. Then they got the Mariners for a couple of days. Then the Rangers for a four-game set. Then the A's for a three-game set. The Royals for a three-game set. The Rays for a three-game set. Royals, Blue Jays, Rays. That's the rest of the month. Rays twice, Royals twice, A's, Rangers, Jays. So it eases up quite a bit from where they've been at, because it was before this, it was Sox, it was Yankees on the road, it was Indians on the road, it was the Giants, Angels. They just played a tough stretch of teams, and it's going to ease up for them. So the Stros may be the team that is on top of the winning percentage list by the end of June. So there you go.
No, I'm just going to say from this game, I do think that we have to mention how crazy it is that J.D. Martinez, at a point where we weren't sure if he was going to be on a team to start the season, leads all of baseball in homers with 19, leads all of baseball with RBIs at 48. He had another home run last night. He's hitting .318 on the year. MVP talk, I feel like at this early on, is just to put into perspective how incredible people have been. And, J.D. Martinez has been absolutely awesome. And it's just It's just wild that he was almost not on a team to start the year.
Yeah, I mean, there was a, you know, it was a contract negotiation with the Sox. It was just a prolonged negotiation with them. And, you know, he wanted $200 million, and he wasn't really going to get that. So he's well paid, but you can appreciate the fact that he's come in and worked his tail off, and he's killing it. He's up there with him. He'll be up there for MVP votes by the end of the year if this continues, certainly. It's also impressive because he stepped into a brand new environment. You know, a lot of guys, like as a lifelong Yankees fan and baseball fan, I more so than most fans am pretty easy on guys that come in the first year and scuffle a little bit. I think it's hard to make a transition, new city, new team, new environment, especially when pro athletes and baseball players in particular are so routine oriented. 162 games, got to do it the same way to try to keep your mental focus locked in. And I think upsetting the environment can screw up a lot of guys. And we've seen it where they struggle their first year in Boston or New York or wherever. And by year two, they're back to the guy that they were. So I am usually softer on guys. But for him to come in to the new environment is even more impressive.
Yeah, it's been a remarkable year. Just speaking of remarkable years, just because I wanted to look at it and as I question the – Justin Verlander is out of his mind right now. His ERA on the year is a 1.11, but I don't know if you've seen his month of May. He had six starts. He went at least six in every single one of the games. He only gave up four earned runs for the entirety of the month. He never gave up more than two earned runs, or he never gave up more than one earned run in all of these games. The most hits he sacrificed in any of the six starts was five hits. His ERA for the month was a 0.86. It is, I mean, it's absolutely remarkable stuff, and of course, hilarious enough. Throughout those six starts, he ended up with a pair of losses and a no decision to go along with three wins.
And there's a stat I'm looking it up right now. Our buddy Mike Florio posted it the other night. It was regarding Jacob DeGrom, who threw.
Oh, poor Jacob DeGrom.
In May, he had five starts. In May, he had a 0.7 ERA, which is the lowest, I think, by a starting pitcher since 1995 for a guy that made five starts in the month of May. And the Mets won one of those games. They won one. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. First lowest in the month of May since 1995, a guy that made five plus starts in May, and they won one of those games. So, unfortunately, that is the case there. Mookie Betts, moving on to stay on this game. Yeah, I know. It's crazy. By the way, I was going to bring this up. We're all over the place right now, but I was going to bring it up because last night, you know what the Mets got out of Zach Wheeler?
I actually got a really
nice start out of Zach Wheeler. Six innings strong, seven hits, two earned runs, and they lost. Because Seawald blew the save, and they gave up seven runs in the last three innings. Mets lose 7-4. They're up 2-0, 7-4 by the end of it. So they cannot get anything out of the bullpen. Their bullpen is the third bullpen ERA, the third worst in the National League right now. Brandon Nimmo, though, two more hits. He hits a home run, two RBIs. They struggled to get him on the field somehow at the beginning of the year. Now he's hitting .294. He's got seven home runs. And the guy that they wouldn't really move around, Adrian Gonzalez, Jay Bruce. Jay Bruce, by the way, maybe not their best investment. Jay Bruce right now is looking at his numbers last night. Jay Bruce on the year is hitting .228. He has three home runs. That's not going to get it done for $13 million.
I'm going to be honest with you.
When he was
it's
their,
not
when
good.
He was their signature offseason signing. Last thing... Well, I want to get to two guys, and then we'll come back after the break
talk a little bit more about it. Yeah, cool.
So Mookie Betts placed on the DL, left abdominal strain. He is going to be returning on June 8th. coming in for him is, it doesn't really matter. Sam Travis is going to be coming in from Pawtucket today to take the roster spot vacated by Betts. So he comes back June 8th. That is next Friday. I think in a weekly league, you can't expect Betts to play all the games next weekend. So he's a zero for next week. Bummer, because you don't want to see that something like that linger. An abdominal strain, those things, they were hoping he would come back, but it's retroactive to May 29th. They were thought a little bit of rest. Come back yesterday, batting practice session didn't go well for him. So he's out for next week, and you hope it doesn't linger. Additional, we'll talk about this more after the break, but obviously the Clayton Kershaw to the DL is a big one. He came back in a start a couple of nights ago. He went through five innings, and he was okay, but clearly his back wasn't all the way there. His average fastball velocity was below 90 miles an hour. And at 1 year ago, he threw over 1,100 fastballs, and every single one of them was over 90 miles an hour. He couldn't average that the other night. Mike and Kevin back right after this.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Back on FST, talking baseball at the top of the hour. It's going to be In This League with Bogman and the Welsh, and then we're going to have weekend fantasy update on after that. So, Kev, you were talking about you had a question for me specifically. I was talking about Kershaw, which is obviously important because we don't know how this is all going to end up. It's another back issue. Look, he's had this back issue last year before. Now he's had the back issue again. He comes back after a month on the shelf, basically, and goes out on Thursday night, throws five innings. It wasn't good. Like I said before the break, all of his fastballs were over 90 miles an hour last year, every single one of them, over 1,100 thrown. And the other night, the velocity was not there. Now, Kershaw doesn't live in the 97 to 98 world. He doesn't have to. He's got command of unbelievable breaking pitches. But the back issue is going to be a problem, obviously, for him long term until he gets it fixed. He's only 30 years old. He's not some 35-year-old pitcher at the end of the road. They have a significant investment in him. And they're scuffling this year, and do you take the bold move of putting him on the shelf for 3 months or whatever to make sure that he's right? He's too much of a long-term investment for him, for you to push him on a season like this, even as big as the payroll is and all that kind of stuff.
It's a tough, tough spot, right? Because you mentioned that. I mean, he's only 30, so, you know, him kind of when we were kind of getting into this segment, I was gonna ask you maybe is this the end of the era of the Kershaw dominance? I remember I was listening to one of the preview shows on this network, and I think Jake Seeley called it the Clayton Kershaw Award, so he predicted who'd finish second. And he was, I mean, it's totally, I think, fine to make that type of prediction, right? Because of just how good this guy has been as long as he's been able to stay healthy. But, you know, the injury bug has been there with him now for a couple of years, and I mean, it feels probably it's got to be premature to say is it an end of an era, but I mean the days of the playing field of being Kershaw than everyone else, at least that certainly feels over. No,
what feels over
in terms
of Kershaw being totally dominant?
Not that he's no. If we ranked like who are the best pitchers in baseball, right? Every conversation started with Kershaw at one. We'll talk after that. I think now it is very fair to say, even if he gets it together, because, I mean, you mentioned last night with the velocity. I don't think there are 10 pitchers you would take over Clayton Kershaw, but I think that you could make a case, at least you would take Scherzer. I mean, I know it is recency bias, but what you're getting from Verlander right now, I just, you know, it is a strange thing when you're used to such dominance from a guy. And
I mean, if you're a fantasy owner, I think you're trying to hit the eject button on Kershaw, but you won't get any value back that approximates what he can do when he's healthy. You're just going to be selling it for 30 cents on the dollar, you know, maybe less, maybe a little more, but it's a random guess. But I think you'd be, look, it could screw up your fantasy season. Royally, he's a first round pick and he could be out for months now. It's a total guess with this injury. You don't know exactly what it is yet. But it's not like Mookie Betts were. They're stating he's coming back next week. You know, that's a little bump in the road that he can withstand. But having your number one pitcher that you spent a first-round draft pick on that's out for months at a time, he's already missed time, he will miss more, is a lot. I think as far as the macro argument of who's the best pitcher in baseball right now, I think for right now you can give Scherzer the mantle, but it doesn't dismiss that Clayton Kershaw has been better than everybody for the last most of the entirety of his career. I always balk at an initial attempt at dethroning somebody or displacing somebody from those standards, only because people want to pin you down to, well, right now, today, who's best? Because Kershaw's on the DL. Like, I know you're not doing that, but people are trying to pin you down to an answer. And I do think it's always kind of a rolling, subjective case. Like, yeah, if Jacob DeGrom pitches better for a month than Max Scherzer, which he sort of did, but Scherzer was right there with him, does it mean he's better than Scherzer in that moment? No, like Max Scherzer, I love Jacob DeGrom, and he's great. He can't get a win to save his life because the Mets are terrible, but, you know, he can't hit. But it doesn't mean that I think DeGrom is automatically better than Scherzer because he's had a better run, or Mike Foltynewicz is, or Aaron Nola, or Walker Buehler, or whoever, some of these other guys that I'm bringing up that have been extremely hot on the mound. I think you have to take it all into account. You know, just keep in mind, Clayton Kershaw, from the time he was 23 years old, Cy Young, second in Cy Young, Cy Young, Cy Young, third in Cy Young, fifth in Cy Young, second in Cy Young. That was last year when he was missing games because he was hurt. And 2 years ago when he was missing games because he was hurt. Like, he was still a top five Cy Young guy. So there you go. But right now, 1-4, 2.76 ERA, and he'll be on the shelf for a while. It's a bummer. I like watching him pitch. I'm lefty, big lefty pitcher. I think very often he has been taken for granted by sports fans in general and to some extent East Coast-based sports fans. Not always easy to watch Dodgers games or Angels games for that matter, and I apply the same thing to Mike Trout. I think they're a little bit taken for granted, and you have historically great pitcher and hitter playing in L.A. right now, and people don't watch them all that often. Make sense?
No, absolutely. To your 40 cents on the dollar point, right? Like, let's say that's what you get on in return, 40 cents on the dollar. Is that worth the chance of not seeing the dollar go down to zero? Because...
Oh, you have to... Yeah, that's the million-dollar question.
Like,
you have to figure that out. Can you pivot to a couple of other smaller pieces that can help you somewhere? Maybe you're maybe a hole in your outfield because of injuries, or you lost somebody else for the year, you've lost a different pitcher for the year, and you need somebody to pick up the slack, whether you need, maybe you're moving over to saves or whatever the category you're lacking in. So yeah, plenty of people are going to win leagues without Clayton Kershaw on them. So it's just when your first round draft pick goes south in this manner, it's tough to recover from in any sport. Baseball, It can be a lot more transactional. You can turn the roster over a lot more, but it'll be tough to lose Clayton Kershaw.
If I had Clayton Kershaw in a fantasy league, this would be, for me at least, the route that I would go. I would approach the best team in the league. I would offer him Clayton Kershaw. Typically, anybody who right now would be at the where they look at their like they have the best record, they've won the most categories, whatever it may be, they have the best team. They will say, I can deal with giving up a couple of tertiary pieces, and I can have a Clayton Kershaw sit on my bench. I'll still win enough, and I'll take Kershaw. Once they do that, you will either get the return from them, or if they agree enough to make a move, you then do have to let the rest of your league be put on notice. I am about to trade Clayton Kershaw to George, right? And as long as everybody knows that George is the best team in the league, then a couple of other people are going to maybe get involved because they're like, oh my God, we can't let George get Clayton Kershaw. And then all of a sudden, 40 cents on the dollar maybe becomes 65 cents on the dollar, and maybe he never comes through. But at the end of the day, if you have Clayton Kershaw, odds are you are struggling right now because that's your first-round pick. At best case scenario, you got him on what, the turn in the second round?
No,
so
you did not get him that late.
So then, okay, so it's a first-round pick. So I think that even if there's a chance that he comes back, odds are your roster at the moment wouldn't be able to survive an elongated stretch without Clayton Kershaw. So I would approach the best team in the league, offer him Kershaw, see what the return is, then put the rest of the league on notice, take your best offer, maybe get 70 cents on the dollar.
You won't get 70 cents on the dollar, but I can appreciate your strategy there. I think you're going to have a few of those guys ticked off at you, conceivably in the league, but I understand the move that you're trying to make because maybe the guy is so good at the front, he's willing to take a risk. If I'm that guy at the front, I'm probably not taking that risk because it's too unclear right now. He's on the 10-day DL with a back strain, and it's unclear when he's going to rejoin the rotation. I would place a significant wager that it's going to be longer than 10 days that he's on the shelf. So, unfortunately, that's the deal with Kershaw. I'll come back to some more baseball in a minute before we do that. If you want a chance to win two tickets to a 2018 World Series game, go to dailyroto.com/DKMS. There you'll find a link to a free DFS baseball contest every day. The contests are sponsored by DKMS, who are looking for your help in the fight against blood cancer. For many patients, a bone marrow transplant is the best chance for survival, while 30% of patients can find a matching donor in their families. 70%, nearly 14,000 people each year, must rely on a benevolent stranger to step up and donate. Find out how you can help and play in free DFS contests with a shot at winning two tickets to a 2018 World Series game. Go to dailyroto.com/DKMS. That's dailyroto.com/DKMS. So what else were we talking about? Kershaw, the Mets. What do you want to talk about with the Mets?
Well, they
stink. They can't hit.
There were two things that
they can't hit
that stood out to me. On the DeGrom point, do you know what his record is?
Yeah, he's 4-0.
That's crazy.
But he can't. Yeah, and he doesn't lose because he doesn't give up any runs.
Yeah, no.
But the bullpen blow. The crazy part is he can't get a win. He's been 4-0. He's been like 4-0 for a while because he's gotten only. Yeah, they won one game in May that he pitched. He pitched five games to a .7 ERA. They won one of those. That's impossible. That's impossible that happened. And I know Mike Florio, our buddy, is losing his mind. You should see his Twitter feed because he's a diehard Mets fan. He goes to games, and he is just incensed at the fact that they just go through this. He goes through this constantly, then blowing games. You know, like I said, third worst bullpen ERA in the league. The worst bullpen in the entire majors is the Indians. Their bullpen ERA is over 6 right now. But getting back to some other stuff, I was watching last night.
Wait, I had a Brandon Nimmo point.
Oh, go ahead.
You know that the only people that would have better on base percentage than Brandon Nimmo are Mike Trout and Mookie Betts?
Does he qualify?
No, he doesn't qualify. He doesn't qualify. Yeah. So he's not on the list. But I mean, still, I think the point would still stand. That is, for all of the years that they had Curtis Granderson hitting leadoff, batting 235, and I know he walked, so it averaged out to maybe like 300. They now have, I guess, a legitimate leadoff hitter, right? I mean, his on base percentage is 436, which is, I mean, it's a delight.
Yeah. So, you know, what I would say is that the irony of Mets fans right now is they can't even enjoy that because it's layered in frustration of the fact that they couldn't get him at bats earlier in the year. And Jay Bruce and Adrian Gonzalez and, we don't have room for Nimmo. Like, you don't have room for the young player that has this kind of talent. Like, what are we doing here? So I think you just kind of are happy that he's up now and getting consistent at bats. But when it was a struggle for them to find at bats for him earlier, how? God only knows, but, or Fred Wilpon only knows, or Mickey Callaway only knows, but I think obviously he's played himself into the lineup every day, and to those who have picked up Nimmo on the waiver wire or drafted him a little bit later in drafts, you're in good shape now with that on-base percentage. Saw an interesting situation last night at Dodgers-Rockies where there was a series of brushback pitches. Matt Kemp got – somebody came up high and tight to Matt Kemp. Ball hit him in the wrist, but it was heading towards his face. And he shrugged it off, and he went to first base. Kemp had hit a homer before that. You know, Dodgers and Rockies have had some history here. Rockies always get into a lot of scuffles. And then comes back either the next inning or two innings later, Nolan Arenado gets a brushback pitch thrown to him. Next pitch, bomb. It was awesome. So fun to watch a guy get brushed back and then the next pitch he hits a bomb. It was awesome. It was a really satisfying moment for him and a really fun thing to watch because the guys on MLB Network were going crazy about it.
Mike, I'm gonna be completely transparent here. The the bar has NBA TV on, and I didn't even notice it was on until George Hill was at the line. And I just watched Tristan get ejected, and it is infuriating me to watch. I just had to let
Why?
You know.
Why? The ejection doesn't matter. It's off of the ruling.
No. It's just because, like, that's where I picked it up from. So I just watched all of the worst parts of that game. I just had to let you know. I know it's not. I know we're talking about Matt Kemp. I absolutely love. I remember. I think Manny Machado did it. Last year against the Red Sox, it seemed like five times because they kept trying to hit him, where a guy gets knocked off the plate, though, and he returns with a home run. Also, if that ever happened to me, which, again, it'll never happen to me, but if someone threw at me and I hit a home run, I would crawl around the base. It would take forever. I'd give a curtain call. If I was on the road, I would nonstop soak the whole thing in.
Yeah, I'm with you. So, you mentioned Manny Machado. He hit a home run last night off the Yankees, his 17th of the year. Mitch Haniger from the Seattle Mariners hit a walk-off home run last night in the 13th. Seattle's won 11 of 14. So, I know I said Houston was getting on a little bit of a roll here with the schedule, but they're running into, after they play the Sox, they're running into a really hot team as they've won 8 of 11, 6 of 8 on its current homestand. And they're only one back of the Strohs, and they stand at 35-22. 8 of those 11 wins have been by one run. They are 6-0 in extra innings this year. So, as much as I said that the schedule was easing up for the Strohs, they're going to run into a battle for first place, and that's a team without Robbie Cano for the next 65 games.
I think we
left
need to
on that
cancel. We need to cancel the AL Central.
Yeah, it's rough right now.
This is disgusting. It's
bad times.
This is putrid.
The Indians are the best team, and they're playing miserably. You got problems there. So that's it for the show, folks. You got Weekend Fantasy Update coming up next. No, I'm sorry. We got In This League coming up next. That's Bogman and the Welsh. Then from 12 to 3, Weekend Fantasy Update from 3 to 6 for Rob Bowe and Kevin Walsh. I'm Mike Blewett. We're coming back tomorrow from 9 to 12 on Fantasy Sports Today, so enjoy the rest of your weekend, and thanks for listening to Fantasy Sports Today on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.